Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, or like a book club for people like reading. This month, they're doing Pick Anything, so we're doing the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and we're doing A Fish Called Wanda. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, Ryan Preston.
And the old guy. And Ryan's in the background. You can't see him, but we can hear him.
He's the disembodied voice.
For some
reason. I waved, just for the record.
So who has the description for the movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
I'll read it. In the Deep South during the 1930s, three escaped convicts search for a hidden treasure while a relentless lawman pursues them.
Do you know what amazed me about this movie? Is this was a play after the movie, like years after the movie. Because this movie to me is set out like every interaction is an act. And when they're walking or the road seems to be, you know, like, building up to it. So it seems to me that this is more like just a play being filmed.
Well, that's really what it is. It's based off of Homer's Odyssey, which I want to know actually how many of the viewers that watched the movie actually knew about Homer's Odyssey and had read it before. I read it in elementary school.
If they even knew.
Yeah, knew it. But my favorite character is Babyface.
Babyface?
Yeah, for sure.
George. George Nelson.
Yeah.
Oh,
I love the ending of it.
Didn't he do that well? I mean,
he did. He totally really did. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of...
You mean Tim Nelson?
Yeah.
Tim Nelson.
Was it Tim Nelson? George Nelson.
No, Tim.
That's not him.
George, Babyface Nelson.
No, that's not the actor's name, the character's name.
Yeah. Oh, the character's name.
Yes.
Because I love the fact
Tim
that he...
Blake Nelson.
I love the fact...
Delmar O'Donnell.
Yeah. I love how the actor played him, all excited for stuff to happen, and at the end of it, he's like, well, I don't really need this. I don't need this. And
I got to say, I really enjoyed George Clooney's character. I think this is probably his goofiest and...
One of his best.
One of his best roles that he's ever done. Yeah, and, true. You know, I was trying to look up to see... Did anybody find out if he actually was singing for most of those?
He couldn't have been.
No, he wasn't. He practiced for a long time, but ended up getting dubbed by a country artist.
Okay. Right. I was trying to figure that out, and I didn't have the time to get that all.
Yeah, they tried in the beginning, and he was singing it in the movie, was dubbed, but he was actually still singing.
Yeah, I just didn't think
it
was his voice.
Hear his singing.
It didn't sound anything like him to me.
Yeah. This guy played George Nelson.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, sorry. Just a little clarification on one of the characters. George Nelson was played by Michael Badalucci. Baluco? I don't know. Something like that. Don't make me swim with the fishes over it.
Balaluca.
Anyways, I really enjoyed this film. I like the music of it. My wife, she worked in retail for a while, and I guess they played the soundtrack at her work. A little bit too much, and she can't stand the soundtrack, but this is the first time she watched the movie, and she enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a surprise for a lot of people. If you didn't see this when it was in the theaters, and you just all of a sudden are, all right, let's see this. This is such a non-Clooney movie that, you kind of go, oh my goodness, the guy can actually act.
Yeah.
And I think for one thing also is the name, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, doesn't really tell you anything about the movie. So if you don't see the trailer, this is a very unknown, which I actually kind of like the fact that, you know, even though I saw the trailer, you going into it, you don't 100% knowing what it's about. I really liked that.
Yeah, I well, got to say. Go on.
No, I was going to say what's funny to me is that not even knowing that it's about the Odyssey, you know what I mean? Like if you miss the credit where Homer is credited as writer. Which obviously isn't in the beginning, but if you don't know that this movie is based on that, you're just thinking this is the greatest story ever made.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably.
You know, not knowing that it came from one of the best pieces of literature ever.
Well, I was kind of looking for the monsters, and the one I couldn't find was Scylla, the thing that kept ripping people off the boat in the Odyssey. So how many of the creatures could you find? Because you had the Cyclops, it was John Goodman's character.
Yep.
You had the Sirens.
Yeah.
Right.
So who else was in there? Because of the two that I remember.
Well, shoot, there was a ton of them. Well, the old man on the push cart was from the underworld thing.
Yeah, yeah. River Styx, boatman.
Yeah. Right. Let's see, what else? I picked up a couple of, oh, well, obviously turning him into a frog. I can't remember what the hell he got turned into, but he, one of Odysseus'
toad.
People got
it
turned
was
into
a
something.
Toad.
We thought you got turned into a toad.
What?
Oh, that was the greatest scene ever with the siren. Oh, it was the best.
But no, no, that was the theater. In the theater. We thought you got turned into a toad.
Yeah, because right before that he was saying, don't go for the treasure.
Yeah, in the movie. Oh, I love that scene. Yeah. That was probably one of the best scenes.
And this, the cast, the three main people are amazing. I mean, you had George Clooney, John Turturro, and Tim Blake Nelson.
Dapper Dan, a little dabble do you.
Oh my gosh, dude. When he's going back and forth with the general store guy, I don't want fop. I'm a Dapper Dan. That was the greatest scene. Every one of the scenes that you're watching is something that you're looking forward to the next one, you know?
You know, my Jen, she was watching the movie, and, oh gosh, I think it was when they got kicked out of the store with his wife.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They got kicked out of the, oh, what was the name of the store? It starts with a W.
The Woolworths.
Woolworths, yes. Thank you. When they got kicked out of Woolworths, my wife goes, man, this is strange. I said, it hasn't even gotten strange yet. And then when they go into the O-E-O, with the KKK, I'm like, there we go. Now it's going to get weird for you.
That part was hilarious because, you know, doing all the dancing and all the random stuff, it was...
Quite a production one.
I kind of wonder if Quentin Tarantino kind of got like a little bit of like comedy vibe from that.
Possibly, I don't know, but you know, like Ryan was saying, is there's a lot of those little tiny interactions, and I mean, outside of George Nelson, my other favorite character is the black guy, Tommy Johnson.
Oh, the guy who sold his soul.
Yeah, the guy who sold his soul. And, you know, I meant to get into the thing of the crossroads demons, but that was something that was they believed in the South. They really thought that at the crossroads, you could sell your soul.
It was a legend. Sorry?
Go on.
Yeah.
I'm saying it was actually a legend. Based off of an actual guy,
yeah,
whose name was Tommy Johnson, and according to the legend, sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads, and then another guy whose name I'm not going to remember, who's another blues artist, actually wrote a song about it, and then everybody started thinking it was the second guy, but for all accounts, the guy that wrote the song. As far as he knew, Tommy Johnson guy was full of devil.
Oh, I should say we're missing one really important part of this movie. This is a Coen's brother movie.
Oh yeah, this is my favorite Coen's brother movie. That's of all time. That's why I picked this movie to begin with. Is it's end to end one of the most entertaining things I've ever seen ever. Yeah. This is by far and away George Clooney's best movie. The cast of characters is freaking a rogues gallery.
Yeah,
it is.
And
it is.
The reason
again, I think the title did a little harm to the movie, as far as I'm concerned, until people started going to the theater, stumbling into it.
Well, I think
all of a sudden they go, "Oh my God, you got to go see."
Well,
this
it
movie.
Became a cult thing.
Yeah,
you know, back in early 2000s. Yeah, gosh, was it really that?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyways, but it became like a real big cult following, you know, everybody, I remember everybody kind of thrown out there for years after, have you seen Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, the funny thing was, you guys mentioned the soundtrack became bigger than the movie.
It did.
Yeah.
I mean, it got to number one on Billboard.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there totally was people doing the Soggy Bottom Boys covers all over the place.
Oh, sure.
And
I've heard people doing it karaoke.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Can you believe that?
I can.
And I got to say, that was what James said earlier about how every, like with the Dapper Dan scene, how every scene you really liked was the sole reason why I actually thought this was originally a play. It's because, you know, every scene was not only jam-packed, but was really well-written. There wasn't a wasted moment in any of the scenes, or even a scene that I thought was, oh, this is stupid, this has nothing to do. Every little bit, every tad bit of detail, even the Dapper Dan cans had a reason for being there.
Yeah.
Which, I'm always amazed about that.
Yeah. About the third time George Clooney said, shit, we're in a tight spot. Oh, man, dude. I mean, it's those little lines throughout this movie that just make it, like, one of the most memorable things ever.
My favorite tight spot was the one at the second barn when they were outside of it.
Shit, we're in a tight spot. So good.
And that guy also is another really great actor. I'm trying to pull him up.
And you know the kid.
Oh, the guy who stole his dad's like model.
Yeah.
I'm we're gonna RUNNOFT.
That's
right.
I love that. That one. That
he did a really good
makes
job.
Me
really
crack did. Up every single time.
I know, it's just really funny. And fortunately, I don't see a picture.
So,
of
do you think this helped change Clooney's career? Where Joel Schumacher tried to kill it.
You know, I think it revived his career because he was kind of running out of stuff in the late 90s or in the early 2000s. And this one, I think, gave his career a little boost. I don't think it did a lot, but it gave it a boost.
I think it actually sort of solidified him with the younger generation.
Yeah.
For people who didn't like his dumb shit from what was it, General Hospital?
Yeah.
No, it was ER.
That's right.
20-something-year-old dude who was watching General Hospital. I mean,
Clooney became a guy
at this point doing this movie.
Yeah. Because after Batman and Robin, which was in 97, I mean, he did, like, The Peacemaker. He was on Out of Sight, Thin Red Line. So he did some Three Thin Kings that, for some movie, reason, too. Is a big hit with people.
Hey, Three Kings is a good movie.
Yeah.
So he actually did some good stuff, but I actually kind of I could see why this movie would kind of make him a celebrity, just because this is completely different, I think, from everything he did before, including the TV show ER.
Well, it was almost self-referential of his character. I mean, you know, a character who's really kind of too cool for school and thinks he's smarter than everybody else, and it's almost making fun of that sort of persona with the context of the movie.
Oh, totally. And I love how the fact that his plans kind of always go awry.
Well, I was trying to find one of my favorite lines, but it was when he was talking to his wife, and she goes, and the little girl goes, "That's my daddy? No, your daddy got run over by a train."
You ain't nothing but a grease spot.
Yeah.
You ain't bona fide.
Yeah, that whole interaction scene right there with the girls and him. Oh, man, that whole thing just always gets me rolling. Just because how quick-witted they deliver the lines.
Oh, yeah, they're fast. I mean, they're really quick-paced.
It was quick-witted, and if you weren't paying attention, you missed the jokes.
There's a lot of those moments, a little back and forth with a lot of the characters that I mean, you'll just miss stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's why it's so much fun to watch it a second, third time. One of my favorite characters in this was Stephen Root, who's a great, great, great character actor. He was the guy that played the blind radio.
Yes, right. I loved that. That was one of my favorite scenes.
Did you look at his picture in IMDb?
Yeah,
Stephen Root.
Yeah, they gave him a
photo of him from about 30 years before the movie.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, he's pretty much known for playing what's his name, Dale, I think, from King of the Hill.
Oh, yeah. Is that him?
Right.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I didn't even pick that up.
Yeah, but also, you mentioned News Radio, right?
No, I didn't. I was about to. News Radio, okay. He was the head of the station and one of the funniest sitcoms.
Really?
Oh, he's the boss in News... Wow.
Yeah, go back and look at... If you guys haven't watched that show, audience members out there, go check that show out. Start from the beginning. Great show.
Yeah. I loved the whole bit in the radio show when they said we're all black except like our fellow over here, and the guy's blind but they're still pointing.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
He's nearsighted.
Yeah, nearsighted. Close enough.
Flat, almost flat blind.
Because this is kind of a jam-packed episode, James, what do you give this?
You know, this one is one of those rare fives for me. If I run across somebody that hasn't seen it, I tell them, turn around and go watch it.
Ryan?
Oh, sorry. I had to mute you guys for a second.
So what do you give this?
Well, this guy's...
This is a 5 out of 5 for every good reason.
Rob?
Yeah, I how can I not give it a 5? I mean, it's a very enjoyable movie. Recommend it for anybody who just wants a good laugh. You know, so yeah.
I would also give it a 5 out of 5. And this is also a comedy and a musical, which is two things in one. I'm not generally a big fan of, but it worked really well together. It was really well done. So Jen, I'd definitely give it a 5 out of 5. And we're going to switch to House of Cards Chapter 10 for probably a few seconds. Any notable things on this? My thought about Chapter 10 was the build-up to 11. Was really what it was to me.
You know, it's kind of like I said last week. They're really making each chapter so that it's dependent on the next chapter following.
It's almost as bad as anime.
Yeah, they really are doing that in this thing. And we're coming up to a dark twist for Francis.
Yes, we are.
Francis.
And kind of interesting.
I do kind of, my favorite standout moment, I think, on this one was the fact that he was by himself. And by himself, he's still a very dangerous individual. Which
he is.
I really liked the fact that he showed, I don't really need anybody. I liked that.
You know, this one for me, I think this one was more of a highlight of his wife putting her foot down.
Yes.
Just saying, I'm tired of your crap. That's pretty much what it seemed like to me.
Yes.
And I loved it. I loved the way she did it. She did it in a way that he really can't get mad at her over.
He tried to.
But she's just pretty much just laid it out. This is not what our relationship's built upon.
Yeah.
You know?
And she rules it with logic.
Yeah.
Which is what he's kind of all about.
Yeah, that's really it.
Right.
And we'll get into number 11 in just a few moments. And
so, yep, thank you, James. So right now we're going to get to A Fish Called Wanda, which is a 1988 classic. And who has the description? I'm assuming it was James.
So in London, 4 very different people team up to commit armed robbery, then try to double-cross each other for the loot.
So let me tell you a little bit of why I picked this movie. Because of a number of things. For one, this is a very underrated movie. It became.
Ryan, are you there?
We'll have Ryan back in just a few moments.
Ryan.
Yep.
Okay. We lost you again. We want you to be part of the show. You don't have to leave yet.
You did lose me. I'm back.
Okay. It's easy. I saw the movie in the theater, and I thought at the time it was one of the most funniest things I've ever seen. It's more of a modern-day slapstick comedy. It's pretty bad when you have to describe why you find the movie funny.
Like the Keystone Cops.
But, yeah, but if you were to look at some of the comments made by some of the people that left reviews, some of them were absolutely right on. I mean, Kevin Klein, this is probably one of the funniest roles that man has ever played. He was absolutely hysterical.
And but before I sort of say, do you want to introduce some of the people on it?
The cast was...
Because I want to say some like the main characters.
Well, John Cleese, obviously, and Jamie Lee Curtis, and Kevin Klein, and Michael Palin. Yeah.
Oh, and God, Michael Palin was so funny.
Wasn't he? He's absolutely hysterical in this movie. And, interesting enough, the stuttering.
Yeah.
The Association for Stutterers actually gave this movie a thumbs up for doing a good job of describing what happens to people that stutter.
Well, yeah. I read somewhere based on doing this that he got approached by some people that were thrilled, you know, about his portrayal that was so sort of authentic about stuttering, and that Michael Palin ended up creating some institute to help stuttering people.
Yeah.
It's so, and it's really funny, and for those of you that saw Kevin Klein eating the fish, he didn't really eat the real fish. Okay, it was his jello.
Because he's scared.
No,
he probably wanted to. Get
this guy is crazy enough. He said, "I'll eat the real fish. I'll eat the fish." Yeah, and I bet he would. He would have.
I think Otto is probably my favorite character on here because I love the fact he's like quoting philosophy and he thinks he's this really smart guy when he's dumb as a box of rocks and.
Yeah,
he's
whatever. Everything about these four characters was a running gag. You know what I mean? My favorite of which, obviously, Michael Palin trying to kill the old lady was so good.
But that was
probably the best scene in the entire movie. Was anytime that happened?
gosh. Yeah, that was an amazing thing. You know, and that's the thing that I really want to point out to people out there is John Gleese, writer, created the story. He even went out and hand-selected the director.
Who hadn't directed for 24 years. Yeah.
And came out of retirement because John Gleese came out and said, please come help.
And that's why he's got a credit as a director, because he did direct a few scenes to help out, but he wanted this director so bad because he thought he was perfect for the movie. And I think
this movie really is the little story they could. I mean, it was a really, really small budget. Right. I mean, even at the time it was minuscule. And they did things that you would see in larger budget sort of Hollywood movies. And this thing was under $10 million.
Right.
I mean, grossed eight times that much.
Oh, it made so much money. Anybody that bought into it has to be singing still today, because it made a ton of money, and it's still making a ton of money. It's just amazing.
And this was before the era of super mega movies like you have now with Marvel, whose budgets are $100-something million.
And they still suck.
Yeah. And they, you know,
Iron Man 3, out there. I'm talking to you.
But anyway.
Anyways. But.
Did you know a guy? There was a person in the movie theater who actually laughed so hard and so much about the scene where he stuck the French, we call them French fries, or the
French
chips.
Fries up the nose.
Up the nose. That the guy laughed so much on the scene because it reminded him of something that he did as a kid, that he actually had a heart attack and died in the theater.
Laughed himself to death.
Was
there any scenes in this movie that you guys really liked? Like, for me, it was the dog scene where the guy kept trying to kill this old lady. He killed all three of her dogs, and she finally died. And I love the fact that he was such an animal lover that he showed up to the dog funeral. And the other scene was the ending scene where he got ran over by the world's slowest vehicle.
And survived, though.
And not only that, he survived to be on the plane. Yeah.
And then who knows where he is.
That, according to the what happened afterwards, survived falling off the wing of said plane.
The guy couldn't.
I would not leave it to John Gleese to not think of that.
Yeah.
It's worth pointing out. Well, one thing first, actually. My favorite part, John, you brought up. What do you call it? The scene where he's getting run over by the steamroller. He's having an exchange, but just before that, with John Cleese, and he's saying, like, you guys hate winners. That's what it is. He's like, oh, well, what about North Vietnam? He's like, what?
That was a tie. That was a tie.
That was the greatest line ever.
Oh, so you now,
just remind, fortunately, now, there's a number of lines. In
now,
this
I want to point out something for people out there. Okay, now, A Fish Called Wanda was the exact same year that Who Framed Roger Rabbit was released. Now, what scenes do they have that seem similar? Anybody? Being run over by a steamroller.
Oh, okay.
Come on.
Yeah, that's ironic.
You both fail. You and Ryan fail.
I was going to say the other scene I really liked was when he went to John Cleese's house and he was singing
that was my favorite scene when the family walks right in. And the lady had to come up with the suckling baby in her arms, too. It's like, wow. Yeah. Really?
They had a more wholesome-looking family.
Yes.
You know what's funny is this is... There's two movies where these four characters have actually been in the same movie together. About a decade after doing this one, they did a movie called Fierce Creatures, where they were working in a zoo, and Kevin Kline also sort of playing, I think, the managerial bad guy, if I remember right. But Michael Palin, John Cleese, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Kevin Kline had to reprise their work together just because I think they had so much fun doing this.
Oh, they had to.
I'm surprised the movie got made.
Jamie Lee Curtis is quoted as saying that during the
sex scene.
Yeah, okay.
With
the faces that Kevin Kline was making, they couldn't get through the scene. She was just dying from laughter at his orgasm scene, and she couldn't keep it together.
And she covered her face with a pillow.
Yeah.
Tried to do a chief there and smuggle kill herself there. So like I said, because of the shortness of this episode and the jam-packed of it, James, what do you give this movie?
You know, this one, it's unfortunately only a 4 for me. I want to go higher. I don't know. There's just a few parts with him and his wife that kind of drive me nuts, to be honest.
Robert. I'm going to give it a 5. I think it holds up just as well as the last movie we did, and it's way earlier. Yeah. I think this was the start of a lot of comedy movies in the how they were going to take them and how far they were willing to push things. You got to remember, this is 1988, and some of the stuff that they were doing, some of the stuff that John Klein did and things like that, what weren't seen before. I mean, this stuff wasn't appropriate, and they broke some boundaries with this one. So I definitely think for being innovative and breaking, leading the way for many other actors in movies, I'm going to give this a 5.
Ryan?
Man, before watching it, I was all ready to give it a 3 because I remembered it pretty fondly, but, that's your memory could be a little clouded. Watching it again, man, I was surprised how well this movie held up, how funny the characters still were. This is a real solid 4. Like James said, maybe just a couple of little pacing issues with a couple of wife scenes. But again, sort of scene to scene, a really funny movie and really entertaining a couple of times.
One of the funniest out there.
Yeah.
Wow, this is where I come in. I give it a 3 out of 5.
But you didn't really watch it.
I actually watched it.
You listened to it.
I watched it.
Oh, you listened to it?
No, I actually watched it. I've seen it twice, more or less.
You watched it in the side of your glasses?
Okay.
And just my biggest problem, honestly, is because I'm just not a giant fan of comedies. Unfortunately, I'm really not. So that is definitely something that goes against it, and I'll be honest. Pretty much, I only really like the scene at the end and the scene with the dogs. There were bits and pieces I loved. But overall, for me, it's a 3 out of 5. But I think it's just because me is there. Rarely ever do I laugh at comedies. So.
Okay.
I think that's more.
He loves Jim Carrey.
I'm gonna go ahead and announce to the class right now that I hate cats and will therefore not enjoy movies with cats in them.
You didn't like The Aristocrats?
Oh, hell's no! Wait, The Aristocrats or The Aristocats? One of those I liked.
Wait, that's even more. Hey, if you don't like cats, you don't like cats. Gonna get a lot of cat ladies mad at you.
Want to start this House of Cards episode off. Okay, now
he was right,
ladies and gentlemen. I made predictions, and what did I keep on saying? How long until he does what? Gets his hands dirty. Well. Dun, dun, dun.
But question, did he wipe off the bottle?
No.
I didn't think
James
so.
James is going to be paying attention to that.
He didn't wipe off the bottle. He didn't wipe off the door. He didn't wipe off the button that he pushed.
He wiped off the door. That was the last scene of him walking
out. Not everything
out.
He touched.
So well, the question
I mean, not everything
right.
he touched.
You're right. I mean, it was probably CSI-wise, that was a poor...
Not even CSI. That's a detective with a little brush.
Yeah.
Besides getting a little too pedantic, even for us, do you think that's going to affect later episodes?
You think it'll come back at him?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Okay,
because
do you think
he's
going to
become
haunt
vice
him,
president.
Or do you think it's going to come back at him?
Yeah, because I think it's going to come back to
I
him.
I think
and
it
he's
will come back
president.
At him because, on top of that, another big, 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 big issue, even if he's wearing a hat when he walks out, they had video cameras of you driving in with him in the passenger seat. Mm-hmm. Move him to the driver's seat, you idiot. Moving on.
Well, I was going to say, not necessarily. He could have just.
We'll
he could
see,
come up
we?
With a reasonable excuse for that.
We'll see.
Anyways, yes, he could have, but he's walking out.
Because I do think, it probably not this season, maybe the second or third or fourth or however many there are, I bet it's going to come back to haunt him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little bit disappointed that it's going that route, but there really wasn't another way they could really go and keep viewers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way.
I started to think of, if they're here already... This is going to get worse before it gets better. This is a line that he crossed that he's now going to be a little more comfortable crossing the next time.
But what makes you think that he hasn't crossed it before? Dog killer.
Now, that's a good question because there's really nothing about his personality that thinks He's new at this, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing to insinuate.
He's played the game long enough to have, you know, what's his goodbye for if not shit like this.
Well, because I think that the thing that I would agree with Ryan is, especially because when you see the car scene where we killed him, you see him pause and just start doing stuff. So obviously that's not new, because I've never been in a car and think, I'm going to kill this guy. Drink. I mean,
So was it premeditated?
I bet not premeditative, but I bet that was a plan B, though.
My question is, he always has...
plans.
Well, not only that, but my point was that he's always got security personnel with him. Mm-hmm. Usually Capitol Police officer is always there. So I mean, he had to figure out, I mean, if this was premeditated, he had to figure out the whole setup. How does he not have one of his security details with him? You know, the whole thing. So there was an awful lot of work to set it up to do this.
Well, I think...
unless it was an act of
there
opportunity.
There was that episode, 3 episodes back, where he got the new security guard that fired with civilians on the road, blah, 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 blah. So he what's the term I'm looking for? He vets his security pretty well beforehand, knowing that he can just tell them, you need to go over there.
Yeah.
And don't look, and I'm gone.
And that security guard's already in his pocket anyways, because he got his job back.
Right.
But I think the other thing is he could say, he's with another senator. You know, I think that's probably what would end up playing off anyways, is the fact that this guy's in trouble. I didn't want to bring in anybody else to the, you know...
Yeah.
But I still think it's going to come back to haunt him.
I think there's going to be something. Yeah, of course. But we'll see. I figured he was going to get his hands dirty, and that was going to be the close of season one.
I will say that, damn, this TV show got dark quick. I mean, this wasn't just a little bit, you know, like half a season or 6 seasons, you know what I mean? Like some shows, it takes a full year. This was 6 episodes or whatnot, or 10 episodes. So this went really crazy.
Yeah.
And so next week is our theater pick. And because our other partner, Crime, apparently is having technical problems.
Again.
We are doing Mad Max.
Beyond Thunderdome.
This time there's no Tina Turner. Thank you.
just Mad Max, people. Just
not, just Mad Max.
Seriously.
And I'm kind of hoping, Master Blaster comes somewhere in there. Just, well, you'll see.
He likes him.
He's a funny character. It's really the midget on his shoulders I think is funny.
True.
Wow. So, ladies and gentlemen, I gave...
Let's try to give Ryan the last word.
So I gave the movie Oh Brother Where Art Thou a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 5. Ryan gave it a 5. Rob gave it a 5.
Boring. We all agreed.
Another rare one. And here's the one. Ryan makes fun of me for not liking comedies. I gave A Fish Called Wanda a 3 out of 5. James, Ryan gave it a 4 out of 5.
At least a 4.
And come Rob on. Gave it a 5 out of 5.
I was there.
And because apparently Skype is derailed for the the voice without a body.
Let's mute it at least, or let's end it without this beep going on in our ear.
I know. Ow!
This episode really went off the rails.
Sorry, Ryan. For those of you that have stumbled across this review, sorry to you too.
Go watch news radio.
Hey, A Fish Called Wanda was really not that good. Come on.
It was.
So, ladies and gentlemen... As usual, we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.